You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is The Public Eye. We know that notoriety and celebrity status is certainly something that that many people, not all people, but many people strive for, especially in the the entertainment business, but also equally important in the literary business. This week I've invited author Carmela Chiraru to join me. Her new book is Lives of the Wives, Five Literary Marriages. And what's so interesting about this is that we'll be talking about five well-known literary people, I would say almost icons in the literary world, and what life is really like. And when you pick up a best-selling book and you think, wow, this author is a magnificent writer, he or she is so terrific, and everything's going their way, they're making a lot of money, they live this luxurious life, they travel, and all of that may indeed be true. But as we find out in Carmela's new book, that in this case, these literary figures, it was actually the wives, the five wives, who kept them grounded and were really a source of support and foundation. So as they say, hang in there, and we'll be talking with Carmela for the next half hour or so. Carmela, nice to have you with us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I'll really, really appreciate it.
No problem. This is great. I got to ask you, though, from the outset, I know authors will ponder a topic, an idea, but why five? I mean, you picked five particular, and we'll get into some of that, literary figures, but why even discuss the wives or the lives of literary figures? Was there something that caught your attention?
Yeah, it was actually working on my last book, which was sort of a collection of mini biographies of writers who used secret identities. My book was called Nom de Plume. And, not at the time, but I think later, I had sort of absorbed the fact that these women were enablers, partners, assistants. They were co-conspirators in maintaining these secret identities. And they used to do so many things for these writers to help them write and keep up their secrets. And, that kind of, that was really interesting to me how much they did for their writer husbands in most cases. And also, a favorite writer of mine, Lori Moore, who's one of our great fiction writers, in an interview, she said once, every writer needs a wife, and so that stayed with me. And there were, kind of different sources. And at a certain point, I thought, gosh, what a great thing to explore is the women who helped make these kind of, masterpieces possible. And what were their lives like?
I know people are asking as we get into the broadcast, who are these men? Who are these authors? So who are the five that you selected for the book?
Yeah, so it was a tricky process because I had quite a long list initially, and then I realized, and this is sort of reinforces the point of my book, there wasn't a lot of information about many of the wives. There was about the husbands, and so that by necessity eliminated those people. So I landed on couples I found fascinating. Their lives were full of drama and infidelity and alcoholism and just constant turmoil, and it ended up being an interesting assortment, and there were some through lines and connections among them, which was interesting. But yes, I settled on five, and one of them is Una Troubridge and Radcliffe Hall. They were a lesbian couple, and Una Troubridge was very much the devoted wife. She played that role. And what's interesting about them is that even though they may seem radical, they were extremely conservative politically and snobs and anti-Semites. I mean, they were real interesting characters, to say the least. And so I thought, there was so much in that relationship that was fascinating to explore. And they were, in my book, they were the only couple that stayed together, had difficulties, but stayed together. Elsa Morante, the Italian writer, and her husband, Alberto Moravia, they're both, now considered two of Italy's great post-war writers, but sort of got together early on in their careers. And Elaine Dundy, who wrote a novel called The Dud Avocado that was re-released by New York Review of Books and now has brought her some renewed attention in recent years. And her husband was a British theater critic, Kenneth Tynan. And in his time, he was extremely powerful, and their circle of friends were Hollywood celebrities, and they were kind of the toast of the town wherever they went, and behind the scenes had a really horrible marriage. And, she had to kind of break away from him in order to have a literary career. I wrote about Elizabeth Jane Howard, who was married to Kingsley Amis, who similarly was a very promising novelist, but had to put it all on hold while she was married. Probably the best known of the couples in the book is Roald Dahl and Patricia Neal, the actress.
Mm.
And when they got married, the headline in the newspaper was Patricia Neal marries writer. You know, so he was not known at the time, and that was an interesting dynamic.
PR piece that came out for the book, it's in quotation, so I don't know if it was something that the publisher put together, but with an ego the size of a small nation, the literary lion is powerful on the page, but a helpless kitten in daily life, dependent on his wife to fold an umbrella, answer the phone, or lick a stamp. I guess it looks like it's a quote of yours.
From my book. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you think, wow, how could someone that has risen to the fact of being either prominent in the literary world, either nationally or internationally, and many had achieved that level, and yet in private life, behind the scenes, couldn't brew a cup of tea. It's like, you know. So the question is, do some of these are famous people in the literary world, these great writers? It sounds like outside of writing, everything else was an effort. Is that sound fair?
An understatement, perhaps. Yeah, I mean, extremely dysfunctional. And, you know, one could argue, I think in some cases, not all, but some of these great works would never have been produced without the wives. And you know, I guess what I didn't mention earlier is, you know, I ended up deciding to skip the most famous stories, like, you know, Hemingway and Fitzgerald and Nabokov, but because they are so familiar. But certainly there are consistent themes among all of these people, and it is that the wives have taken care of so much. And I think some of them are just huge babies in their private lives. Like Kingsley Amis was afraid to be alone at night, and so, you know, even after he divorced, his first wife would come and sit with him and be with him at night and watch television. It was like babysitting, you know, literally. And Vera Nabokov used to lick stamps for her husband. She carried a pistol in her handbag to protect him. She was his bodyguard, and Radcliffe Hall kind of prided herself on being quote unquote like the man of the house and didn't know how to cook, didn't even know how to, you know, make an egg, and, you know, was just waited on by her, you know, the woman who was sort of her wife. It is interesting that they really were able to claim the space and time to write because someone else was taking care of things like laundry and childcare and, you know, cooking and, you know, just endless tasks that they just never had to think about, which is really wonderful if you're the writer. It's not so great if you're the person married to that writer.
Exactly. And I suppose we all can, I suppose we can all find that in ourselves, but to the extremes, as you said, these people rising to such a level, nationally, internationally, in their, in their profession, in this case being terrific writers, only to find out that they were very insecure and had very little ability to cope with day-to-day life. I just want to step in and take a quick pause to remind our listeners, especially if you're just joining us now, that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online, WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. My guest this week is Carmela Chiraru, the author of the new book, Lives of the Wives, Five Literary Marriages, and a fascinating book. Carmela, I'm not just saying this, but this is a departure from what most people would write about. I mean, you took something that most people wouldn't say, oh, five literary figures, and they couldn't boil a cup of water. They had to have people right there by their very side, and it was just funny as you were listening to carrying a gun in her purse or licking stamps for them. It's almost to the point like what was wrong with these people? So which leads me to the next question. In your research, these people who seem to have no other ability outside of writing, what were their upbringings like? Were they pampered? Were they coddled?
Well, you know, I think that's one of the through lines in the book is, and it made me feel a kind of tenderness toward even the most monstrous husbands in the book. They all suffered extreme trauma in childhood. And for the women, you know, in some cases that shaped their relationships with men. And for the men, you know, they were damaged and they suffered mental anguish, and that they would lash out at their wives or their children. And, you know, it sort of, I think writing was the thing that kept them going. And so, you know, that's an empathetic view of these people. But, you know, I mean, just as an example, like, you know, Kenneth Tynan did not know who his real father was until he was older. And he found out by seeing a newspaper photograph and an obituary headline. And he was confused because it was about someone who had died, but it was a picture of his father, you know. So he was very confused. And then he found out from his mother, oh, yes, that is your father. He had a different name and a different family, you know, the whole time you're growing up. And so imagine what that would do to you. And, you know, and Elaine Dundy was bullied and beaten by her father. Just there's a lot of alcoholism and physical and emotional abuse. And so I think in some cases, these damaged people were drawn to each other. And, you know, and I also think that, you know, if you're wondering, well, what was in it for the wives? Why would they be with these kinds of men? I think there's something very seductive about power and fame and money, and you know, even Roald Dahl, he was none of those when Patricia Neal met him, but he was extremely charismatic and intelligent, and, you know, so there's just a pull toward him. Yeah. So, but I think there are certainly some heartbreaking stories from childhood in the book as well.
Yeah, interesting. The combination of Roald Dahl, who everyone I think, or most people have heard of, certainly Patricia Neal. I'm a classic movie fan, so many of her movies.
Yeah.
And she, you know, the funny thing, Carmela, is that she played many roles. You know, strong women helping to support, even in film. So the point I'm getting at is when you had a literary figure like Roald Dahl and an icon of the film industry, Patricia Neal, I would almost think that the dynamics would be even a little bit more mixed, because you have two very well-known figures and clashing of egos, but it sounds like in their case they balanced out.
Yeah, they did for a while, and you know, when they married, they met at Lillian Hellman's house actually at a dinner, and he ignored her the entire evening. So she kind of hated him after that night. But you know, he then sort of wooed her, and they got together. It took a while. She wasn't in love with him. She was still heartbroken and had a breakdown over her breakup with Gary Cooper, who was married. Mm. But he was really the love of her life. So he caught her at a vulnerable moment. But she was very famous. She was extremely beautiful, and she was wealthy. And so he was sort of, you know, drawn to that. But as he got more prominent, it started to get more difficult. And she made herself small for him. You know, I think that's what another theme in the book is, these women who were successful kind of shrinking themselves psychologically for the men they were with. And, you know, a friend of Roald Dahl's pulled her aside and said, look, it's okay if you earn more money, but he needs to control the bank account, you know, just to make him feel better. And you still need to do all the cooking and cleaning, because it's really bothering him. You know, you're not a good wife. And she took that to heart, and she really tried to. But, you know, when he married her, he wrote a lovely letter to her mother. There was no sign of the, you know, monster to come. And he said, you know, well, he said, you know, I'm so lucky to get such a fine girl. That's how he put it. And he said, it'll be a bit strange to have a wife who earns more money than me, but that isn't a problem. You know, I'm confident I'll be able to support her, you know, so already, you know, there was a hint of the difficulties to come.
So in that era, as listening to what Roald Dahl had written, today he'd be labeled a sexist. There might be a lot of blowback against him by women's groups today. So these five unique marriages, these literary marriages, if they were to exist today, would you agree that the dynamics would be totally different?
No. I wish I could. I want to say yes, but I can't. Yeah, because let's say that in some cases, perhaps, right, that you know, maybe it would be a little better. There would be some more equality in the power dynamics. But the reason I say no is because whenever I've mentioned to anyone that I've worked on this book, I've really had many women pour out stories of their husbands cheating on them. And one woman's telling me she's going to get a private detective. And, you know, another telling me that she earned more money than her husband, but her husband wouldn't, you know, help with anything. She had to still do everything. You know, it plays out time and time and time again. So I'm not convinced that it would get much easier. And there's a quote in my introduction from the best-selling author Ann Patchett, who's such a great writer, and she says, you know, gosh, I keep wondering, you know, when, you know, she's a best-selling author. She says, when will I get to stop doing all the cooking and cleaning and making the beds? And, you know, she's still doing all of that in her marriage. So, I think that these men were so difficult that even today they would struggle with the notion of their wives being just as successful as they were.
Is it possible that these women had a strong desire to nurture?
Yes. Yeah, they really did. And you know, I think I would also argue that of the women in the book, Una Troubridge loved being a wife. I mean, Radcliffe Hall did cheat on her, and, you know, she had a nasty temper and could be abusive. But Una Troubridge, truly, it was the great calling of her life, even though when she was young, she was a promising artist herself, and she was a translator, and she had been married to a man and hated it. She felt trapped. But for whatever reason, when she ended up with Radcliffe Hall, that was it. That was, like, her job for life, and she loved it. I think that's fair to say. For the other women, they were nurturing, but they also felt, you know, it was extremely painful to see how productive their husbands were and to not be able to do that as well. But they certainly, there was great passion between, you know, some of these couples, and the women did want to take care of their husbands. And
I would also throw out to you that they, as you said, I mean, any one of us, I mean, we're all vulnerable. We all have egos. We all have desires. We all have dreams. In reading the book, you get the sense that many could have gone maybe with another partner, or even if they had just stayed to themselves without getting married, that they would have been quite famous in their own right. But it does take someone with a lot of your acceptance of oneself, strong feelings about oneself, no insecurities, to play that role, to play that, for lack of a better term, that second fiddle. Is that how many of these women were?
Yeah, they were. And, you know, I think it was also exhausting. The irony is that, some of these men weren't quite insecure. And so, like, Elaine Dundy was constantly propping up Kenneth Tynan. He was, you know, he was very hard on himself about his writing, and she was always supporting him and giving him, you know, that, you know, cheering him on, and didn't get that themselves. And I think probably for someone like Elizabeth Jane Howard, who had been sexually abused by her father, you know, she had low self-esteem and difficulties in her romantic relationships before Kingsley Amis. It was just an endless series of affairs with married men. He was married when she met him. And so the low self-esteem combined with other things made them sort of think, well, gosh, I'm meant to be second fiddle. You know, I'm just getting what I deserve. And it took a lot of courage and time to say, wait a minute, maybe I'm a genius, you know, maybe I deserve to pursue my creative ambition. But it was very hard for them to arrive at that. And Jane Howard in particular felt extremely guilty about leaving Kingsley Amis. I mean, partly because the guy was afraid to be alone at night. You know, she's like, yeah. But she really felt terrible about leaving him, but she knew she had to. She just reached a breaking point and knew she had to write more, you know, so.
It's also amazing that, especially when one, you know, couldn't be left alone at night, to think that they rose to the level that they did. Did any of the wives advocate on behalf of their husbands? You know how difficult it is to be published. You can't be second rate. You really have to have a knack for writing. You need to have tenacity. You have to have patience. But you also have to have a great story. So for many that were, for lack of a better term, insecure in their own work, were the wives like their advocate before a publisher saying, hey, look, you know, in spite of how he acts or, you know, what conclusions you've drawn, look at the manuscript, look at the writing. It's fantastic.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, Una Troubridge was, you know, in addition to managing the household staff and listening to Radcliffe Hall read her work aloud and correcting the grammar and the spelling and the typo, you know, and hundreds of other things she did, she was her agent and manager, and she would go to all the bookstores on the day of publication and make sure the books were prominently displayed and negotiate deals. And then Kenneth Tynan, who had a massive ego, you know, had a sort of blowout with his editor, and his wife, Elaine Dundy, called and advocated on his behalf, you know, please give him another chance. You know, she was always his advocate. And then the other thing she did was that he would, he would lock himself in a room when he was on a deadline, which he had the privilege of doing because she gave that to him. And he would smoke, you know, dozens of cigarettes and stay up all night. And, you know, he'd be very, very tightly up against his deadline. And so she would have to throw on her clothes and hop in a taxi and take his manuscript to his editor, you know, for his newspaper deadlines, and she would personally deliver them.
Oh my God.
You know, so she was also kind of the, you know, the Uber for him and getting his work to his editor before we had the internet. You know, these things had to be delivered like that. So just so many things to make the work possible. And meanwhile, when Elaine Dundy began to write, because her husband had the study, she would be on the living room floor with her typewriter on her knees and her back hurting, and that was how she had to write. You know, so there was no physical space, there was no emotional or psychological space for these women to explore any kind of creative ambition, really.
You know, we think about physical and mental anguish. And as I'm listening to you this evening talk about living with these literary figures as husband and wife, or being there, being there for them, being their advocate in so many ways, being their, being their all. You really have to give these women tremendous, tremendous credit. In the few moments that we've only got a couple of minutes to go, but I wanted to ask you real quickly, what couple of all of the five that you wrote about do you have the most admiration for?
Oh, what a great question. I think that's tough to answer. If I had to say off the top of my head, I think possibly Patricia Neal was so brave because, as you know, she had a series of strokes. Mm-hmm. And, her career was finished and she didn't know if she could walk or talk again. And weirdly, partly through her husband's bullying, you know, he bullied her into getting well again, into walking and talking. He did. It was a horrible way of going about it, but she did get better, and it was because he pushed her so hard himself. He sort of took that on. And I just think her courage was so extraordinary, and she was someone I really admired as a wife, and she was, just such a loving figure. I interviewed her once, and I just, I think she was just an amazing person and so kind and went through so much and loved him even after they divorced. And I think that's one thing I would argue is that even in the worst marriages, these women and the men both got, you know, different things out of the marriage, but they both did. And there was a lot of love and passion as well.
Yeah, a great read. It really is. I got a note that as you were talking, because I couldn't agree with you more on Patricia Neal, one of my favorite films. She starred with, I think, one of her famous favorite leading men, John Wayne, in Harm's Way. She played a very and she played a very supportive role there too. And everybody thinks, well, Duke Wayne. I mean, who was stronger? Who was more of a masculine icon than John Wayne? But in the movie, she really quite often came to his side and really propped him up. So I can see her doing that. So you know, good take on that one. Again, the book is Lives of the Wives, Five Literary Marriages, and my guest has been the author, Carmela Chiraru. And I got to tell you, folks, this book is, I call it out of the mainstream. What I mean by that is you never think that you're going to talk about famous people and the fact that they couldn't do anything for themselves. Carmela has really uncovered something that is so unique, and it's really all about human nature. And that's what I really enjoyed most about the book. So I really would urge you to go out and buy it. Carmela, if people want to post questions, just get more information about you and your background, how might they do that?
Oh, thank you, Al, and thanks for the kind words. They can find me on Twitter. They can get in touch with me through my publisher, HarperCollins, and I'll probably be doing some events coming up.
Great. Again, the book, Lives of the Wives, Five Literary Marriages, my guest, Carmela Chiraru. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.